This is Resonance FM. You're listening to The Bike Show. My name's Jack Thurston, and this is a special show on the Giro d'Italia coming from Bar Italia in the heart of Soho. We haven't been able to get out to Italy, but I'm joined today by Bike Show regular William Breswell. William, welcome.
Thanks, Jack. It's good to be here again.
Well, we've just downed a couple of cheeky macchiatos, so the show may be coming a little bit faster than it normally does. But what is so special about the Giro?
Well, Jack, I mean, we're sat here in Bar Italia and the TVs are on with the screens of the Giro, and, you know, it's that exciting time of the year when the big stage races start, and, you know, the Giro is the big first major stage race of the season, and, you know, now you can probably hear in the background the dulcet tones of Phil Liggett providing the commentary, and, you know, it's the first big race, 3 weeks of tough stage race.
So basically it's the Italian Tour de France, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is, and you know, it's the time when the pro riders really start to show their form for the Tour de France.
And the Italians get into the Giro as much as the French get into the Tour, if not even more.
Yeah, I think that's what makes the Giro a bit more special, actually, than the Tour de France. You know, you look at the leading riders in the Giro every year, and it's dominated by Italians. And, you know, whereas the Tour de France is about the sort of international showcase of cycling, the Giro really is about Italy and Italy's passion for the sport.
Because there are probably more people out on the roads in Italy, sort of amateur road racers, than in France, I think, that I've seen when I've been in Italy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think when you travel around Italy and you drive around and when you do some cycling there, I think the reception that you get is one of a passionate public, well, a public that really feels like they own the sport, and it was them that defined pro cycling from the days of Fausto Coppi onwards.
Well, we'll return to the Giro in a few minutes, but first, it's the second half of my ride with Bill Chidley, chair of the London Bike Messengers Association. The first half was last week, and we just had too much fun, and came back for a second helping. Stamford Street, just by Blackfriars Bridge Road, by the IPC building, and we have another London Bike Messengers Association stencil for a bike messenger killed in action.
Yes, Kelvin Simpson in 1991. It's another one of these where we don't really know what happens, and in fact we almost didn't hear about it at all. It was like someone who'd heard about it told someone else, and they told me, and I phoned up the company that Calvin was working for, which is called Dynamo Dispatch, and they didn't even want to tell me. Like, they agreed to talk to me based on a agreement that I didn't print their name, so they wouldn't even tell us, you know. It was just pathetic, really. I mean, they're out of business now. In fact, all of the companies, all the seven companies that employed the guys that died, they're all out of business now. So
are most bike messengers that you see on the streets of London have been doing it for a long time? I mean, is there a lot of, you know, churn amongst people doing bike messengering, or is there people tend to do it for quite a long time?
I think there is churn at the lower end, so to speak. So, I mean, I think if you've been doing it for more than 6 months, then you are likely to be doing it for at least, I would say, 5 or 6 years. But it's getting past the, you know, the first.
And what's it like when, if, you know, for people who start out, are you at the bottom of the heap?
God, yeah. I mean, it's so long ago. I can't remember what it was like. But I mean, for me, it was slightly different because there weren't a lot of bike messengers around, and in a way, no one really knew what we could do, sort of thing. So the companies weren't used to us, sort of thing. They knew they had to have one.
So what's your advice for someone who wants to be a bike courier?
Don't. There's plenty of bike messengers already. There's not enough work to go around right now. So, yeah, I mean, as chair of the association, I have to say no. There's too many already. So protect my members' interests.
Yeah. Well, so heading towards the closed shop.
I wish, God, yeah. I mean, God, yeah, we would wish it was a closed shop, yeah. Far from it. I mean, there are people, you know, like at the company I work for, there's five people walking through the door a day. I mean, it's definitely a buyer's market, definitely not a seller's market at all.
As a messenger, the amount of money you make is dependent upon the number of
jobs
that you do. Yeah. So in a way, the incentives are to do the job as quickly as possible, may involve calculations of risk.
I mean, that's right. Yeah. I mean, but every bicycle messenger has to remember that you cannot make any money lying in a hospital bed. You will not make any money if you're on your back. So whatever calculation you make, it should be tempered by the knowledge that, you know, there isn't really a safety net for you. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, you get a bit of adrenaline going because you're riding fast and, you know, you want to get the jobs going and you can hear that it's busy. You want to get through the work that you've got in your bag. So you start pushing it a bit, you know, taking a few risks. I mean, definitely, that's part of the mentality. And it's also something that the companies encourage because they get a volume of work. You know, they're facing pressure from their clients whose own clients are putting pressure on, you know, so there's this constant deadline pressure.
Well, here we are in relatively tranquil Soho Square on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, city oasis, yeah. Well, the significance of this spot is that I think maybe my second or my third day as a messenger all those years ago, I rode into Soho Square and I met a guy called Bumble, who was a kind of pretty colourful looking character. A white boy with like a goatee and dreadlocks, and I know that sounds terribly cliched now, but back then it wasn't quite as common as it is now. And he just started talking to me. He was like another messenger, and he just started talking to me, just like that. And it handed me a big fat spliff, and that was it. I suddenly realised that, you know, there was a messenger community, and that I was a messenger, and therefore I was part of that community. So. And at one time, everyone used to hang out here. All the messengers used to hang out here. And that's why they actually put those no cycling signs. There's too many of us took the piss on the old cycling. So. And that's Soho Square for you.
Yeah.
Former London messenger oasis.
And so where did the idea come from to start the LBMA?
Well, it's not a new idea. It's a really old idea. I mean, I was writing for a messenger fanzine called Moving Target in the late 80s, and we heard from New York about a messenger organization there called the Independent Couriers Association, and that kind of was the first I'd ever heard of messenger organization. And then a guy called Mark Cavell, also known as Sky, and who now works at Indie Media UK, started. He was the first guy really to talk about unions and organisation and the need for representation. And he sparked something called the London Bicycle Couriers Union. That didn't work out, but it was still a good effort. And then the TNG tried to get involved. There was another anarcho-syndicalist group called the Dispatch Industry Workers Union. I mean, anyway, the picture I'm painting here is a sort of alphabet soup situation where there's loads and loads of different organisations have come and gone. So the LBMA is the latest incarnation. It's the latest effort to try and organise this sort of disparate group. And the phrase that is associated with organising messengers is herding cats. Herding cats.
In a thunderstorm.
Herding cats in a thunderstorm. I hadn't heard that, but yeah. Maybe not quite as bad as that, but yeah.
And achievements to date?
Well, we organise the European Messenger Championships. The mayor listens to us. I mean, he doesn't do much, but he does listen to us. We put on some really great parties. I left my Philly at home. Do you have another? I want to get blunted, my brother. Now may I make a mark, then make a spark over this fat track? Or should I say dope beat? Subtract. Delete all of the wick-whack that wanna be abstract, but they lack the new knack that's coming from way, way back. Ayo, Premier, please pass that Buddha sack. You heard we quit? No way, bullshit. I told you before, we come back with more hits. I provide right flavor, so you can sketch me. Do me a favor, don't try to catch me. Slightly ahead of the game, I'm not a lame. Ask him, he'll tell you the same. He knows my name, smooth. I drop jewels like paraphernalia. I'm infallible, not into failure.
like a rhinoceros. My speed is prosperous and pure knowledge expands from my esophagus. I write in the night to bring truth to the light. My dialogue is my own, cause Smooth B will never bite.
So Bill, I can't cycle around London for an hour with you without asking you about red lights.
Well, red lights, I mean my attitude is, well, in 1880, the safety bicycle came into sort of popular use. And it wasn't until 1930 that the automatic traffic signal, otherwise known as the traffic light, was felt to be necessary. What I want to know is, if we were fine for the first 50 years, what changed? And of course the answer is motor cars. Because of motor cars, we have to stop too at these blasted things. And my attitude is, it's not necessary for us to stop for safety reasons. Because, I mean, obviously, if there had been a huge problem with safety before 1930, then it would have been dealt with, this turn left. I bitterly resent having to stop at red lights. Bitterly, because they're only invented for motor cars. They don't apply. They shouldn't apply to us. I mean, you know, I accept that we have to obey the law. I don't accept all the rest of that nonsense about, you know, we should all stop at them because otherwise car drivers have an excuse to hate us. That's crap. Motorists break the law all the time, and nobody thinks any the less of the motoring public because of it. I mean, you know, look around. People are on their mobile phones. People are pulled over stop lines. You know, people... I just find that argument so annoying.
You think this is a bit of self-hate coming through from the cyclists?
Oh, man, everyone hates cyclists. Cyclists hate cyclists even more than everyone else. And it just... Oh, come on, guys, give yourselves a break. Why the hell are you going on about it all the time? Find something else to talk about. Why are we in that area of debate? You know, we should be seizing control of the agenda. It's not.
So dream world, if you could change three things.
Three things.
Cycling in London, what would it be?
Well, I'd obviously have a tailwind all the time. That would be the first thing I'd change. Then I would definitely make us allowed to go through red lights, as long as we yielded to traffic, obviously. And third thing... Oh, God, third thing that I would want to change. Oh, yeah, have a special broken glass patrol at night. Goes around with a hoover, hoovers up all the broken glass, so there'd be no more punctures. Tailwind and no more punctures, then I could go through red lights. Cycling heaven.
Well, we're now heading down Theobald's Road. Is it Theobald's Road at this point?
Yeah.
Down towards the Mecca for a Friday afternoon. How did the Duke of York's become the bike messenger pub?
Well, it's really quite simple. At the end of a long week, bike messengers like to sit down to drink. So they like a pub that's empty. And way back whenever it was, one of the biggest messenger companies, Security Dispatch, moved into Clerkenwell, the closest big empty pub was the Duke of York, man. There was no one in there. It was all purple velvet. It was all purple velvet and just weird stuff. And there was no one in there, so it was perfect. And then we just kept on hanging out there. So we've been drinking in there, I don't know, it was 15 years or something. It's just as simple as that.
Well, Bill and I are not the first, by the looks of the bikes on the railings.
Nah, it's mobbed already, man. I mean, it's 6:30, they'd have been in there an hour already, so...
Bill is officially now, because of his reputation and the position of authority as the chair of the London Bike Messengers Association, is now actually too scared to go into the Duke of York's on a Friday night. Yeah. It's official.
No, man.
Do you confess?
Yeah. No, I've got to go home, man. I've got to go home, yeah. That's a sign of age. It's a sign of my advancing years, yeah. And newfound responsibilities, so yeah.
Well, that was my ride with Bill Chidley of the London Bike Messengers Association. We're in Bar Italia. It's a special on the Giro d'Italia. We've got some commentary going on in the background. What is happening in a race, William?
Well, we're into the beginning of the third week of the race, so we're into kind of the culmination of the serious end of the race. We're in the Dolomites. The race entered the Dolomites on Thursday, I think it was. So it's really time to sort the men from the boys. And yesterday was the first major stage, and today's another big mountain stage.
So in the Tour de France, the leader wears the yellow jersey. And what do they wear in the Giro?
It's la maglia rossa. So it's the pink jersey in the Giro d'Italia, which I think denotes an extra special style, which is truly Italian, and a panache, which maybe the French don't quite have.
And who's in pink today?
It's a guy called Savoldelli. He's an Italian rider who rides for the Discovery Channel team. And I think what's going to be interesting this year is that you've got a rider in pink who looks really strong, and he's going to be one of Lance's big lieutenants probably during the Tour de France. So it's a good sign for Lance.
Ivan Basso had a bit of a terrible ride yesterday, didn't he?
Poor old Ivan Basso. Yeah, he was in pink yesterday, and it looked like he was going to take control of the race, but apparently he had a few problems with his stomach during yesterday's tough mountain stage, and he could have dropped off a lot more, but I think the smell in the peloton may have been a bit unpleasant yesterday.
And what else has been going on in the Giro this year?
Well, there have been some interesting rivalries. I mean, this year was the first half of the race was really dominated by a rivalry between two Italian riders, one very young, one a senior guy on the same team, Gilberto Simoni, who's in his 30s, and Damiano Cuniego, who won the Giro d'Italia last year. They're both favourites, but both race in the same team. So there was a bitter rivalry about who was kind of the leading rider.
The way that the team system works is that everybody works for the lead rider. So if you've got two riders doing really, really well, you don't know who to organise around.
That's right. So there was a bit of torn loyalty, and I think that the team was saying that it was still all about Gilberto Simoni because he is the senior rider. But with Cuniego having won last year and looking like he might be in good form this year, you know, there was a lot of rivalry. But things have panned out quite differently. Cuniego has basically dropped away. Simoni's still a contender, but Cuniego's out of it now.
And you've got the Italian newspaper, which is also in pink. And this is time to bring in Zoe Irvin. Zoe, you're going to provide some Italian translation for us.
Hello, Jack.
Now, this is how many? We've got 8 pages of sport coverage in here.
Yeah, it looks like we have. Where am I looking here?
So what are the big stories?
So Salvadelli became red with embarrassment because he was surprised at winning.
Well, as part of the research for this special on the Giro, I've been looking around for some Italian songs about cycling, and I have to say most of them are terrible. But this one is one that we really like, and it's by Paolo Conte, who is in fact playing in London at the Royal Festival Hall on Saturday night, and it's all about Gino Bartali.
Farà piacere un bel mazzo di rose e anche il rumore che fa il cielo fa, ma una birra fa gola di più in questo giorno appiccicoso di caucciù. Sono seduto in cima a un paracarro e sto pensando agli affari miei. Tra una moto e l'altra c'è un silenzio che descriverti non saprei. Oh, quanta strada nei miei sandali, quanta ne avrà fatta Bartali. Quel naso triste come una salita, quegli occhi allegri da italiano in gita, e i francesi ci rispettano, che le balle ancora gli girano, e tu mi fai, dobbiamo andare al cinema, vai al cinema, vacci tu, zazzara zazz, zazzara zazz, zazzara zazz, zazzara. È tutto un complesso di cose che fa sì che io mi fermi qui. Le donne a volte sì sono scontrose, o forse ha voglia di far la pipì. E tramonta questo giorno in arancione, si gonfia di ricordi che non sai. Mi piace restar qui sullo stradone, impolverato, se tu vuoi andare vai e vai che sto qui aspetto Bartali, scalpitando sui miei sandali. Da quella curva spunterà quel naso triste da italiano allegro, tra i francesi che si incazzano e i giornali che svolazzano. C'è un po' di vento, abbaia la campagna, c'è una luna in fondo al blu. Tra i francesi che si incazzano e i giornali che svolazzano. E tu mi fai, dobbiamo andare al cinema, vai al cinema, vacci tu. Zazzarazzaz, 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 zazzarazzaz.
Zoe, what's that song all about? I mean, Gino Bartali, obviously, he's one of the great Italian riders of the 50s and 60s, a real icon of Italian cycling. But what's the song about?
Well, the song is basically about a middle-aged man whose hero, absolute hero, is Bartali. So he's on the sidelines. He's sat in the... We have to get an atmosphere here, because he's sat in a wonderful part in the countryside, sat on the edge of the road, just waiting, because he knows his hero is going to pass him. But he doesn't know when, and he's just happy waiting. He's just taking in the stillness. He's just taking in the calmness of his surroundings. It's hot, it's sticky, but he's just content to wait for his hero to pass him. Meanwhile, his partner keeps coming up, wants him to go away with her, wants him to go and take him to take her out for a drink, wants him to do all these things, and he's just no, just let me be at peace, let me wait for my hero to come past. In the end, she goes, please, 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 and he goes, no, absolutely no, sends her away. Stays there, calm, waiting for him to pass.
There is something quite zen about waiting for the bicyclist to come by, and apparently I've heard that waiting for Godot is actually inspired by the Tour de France, when they're waiting for a rider to come past called Godot.
I had no idea that was the case. Is that a real story, Jack? Are you not bullshitting?
No, I think it's true.
Well, we've got it on the stage on Eurosport here, stage 14. The peloton looks pretty bunched up. They're climbing up a hill by the looks of things.
Yeah, they are. They're on a really famous climb, actually. One of the signature climbs of the Giro d'Italia. It's called Il Passo Stelvio, and it's one of the big mountain passes, which has been kind of renamed after the memories that it evokes from the Giro. It's now called La Cima Coppi, after Fausto Coppi, who, as everyone knows, it was the great sort of god of Italian cycling, Il Campionissimo, and he famously went over that pass, won mountain stages over this route, and there's a piece in the Gazzetta we have here reminiscing about in 1953 when he won coming over Passo Stelvio, when he won his fifth championship in the Giro. So, you know, today's one of those stages when cycling fans kind of reminisce a bit and kind of really savour whoever's going to win on this.
There will be thousands of people on the side of the road, just like in the Tour de France.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's slightly different at this time of year. You know, we're still in May and they're up at about 2,000, 3,000 metres of altitude, so it's pretty chilly up there. But now we can see the TV pictures as they get to the top of Stelvio, and the crowds are getting quite big. You can see all the camper vans there and a few maniacal fans running alongside the riders. And you can see the pink is in the leading group with the Discovery riders leading him up the hill.
Well, we're going to keep watching. And in the meantime, it's the last bike show in the current season. We'll be coming back in a couple of months' time after we've had a little bit of a rest. But I've got a few bits of news that I want to announce today. The G8 protest bike ride is having another benefit, this time on the 27th of May, directly after Critical Mass on the Friday evening, and it's at the Rampart Centre, Rampart Street, E1. And Tim, one of the organisers, tells me there's going to be bike films, food, DJs, and the soapbox trike. So go along to that. It's raising money for the G8 protest ride, which is a ride going from London to Gleneagles to protest about corporate globalisation. And go along on the ride as well. I think it takes about 10 days for about 40 miles a day, camping along the way. Sounds like fun. And also, we featured the Herne Hill Velodrome a couple of weeks ago and the problems that they're having down there. The velodrome is being closed because Dulwich Estate, who are the landlords, have refused to renew the licence with Southwark Council. And there was a public meeting on the 12th of May with politicians, sporting bodies and the cycling and local community. About 300 people came, filled up the hall where it was being held, and there was full support for keeping cycling at the Herne Hill Velodrome. And it looked as though GLA member Valerie Shawcross is leading the kind of political effort to get some kind of a solution between the Velodrome Trust, the Dulwich Estate, and the new developer who's going to be taking on the lease of the Velodrome. We will keep you posted on the weblog about that, but it looks as though things are pretty positive. And the Cyclist Touring Club, the CTC, which is the biggest membership-based cycling organisation in the UK and the oldest, is organising a Cycling for Women weekend on the 4th and 5th of June. I spoke to Shirley Quemby, who's one of the organisers of the London Ride. It seems like they've got rides all over London encouraging women and girls to get out on their bike. And if you want further information, you can reach her on 0208 642 3720. Well, I think that's about the end of the show and the end of the season of the bike show for the time being. All of the shows can be accessed in real audio and MP3 format on the web if you go to www.bikeshow.blogspot.com. There's all the links there to the audio, and you can email the show, send emails to bikeshow@gmail.com, and all those details are accessible, of course, on the Resonance website, which is www.resonancefm.com. Well, this is it. This is me, Jack Thurston, saying thanks for listening to The Bike Show. We'll be back in a couple of months' time after I've gone out on the roads a bit more, got a bit more miles under my wheels. We'll be coming back for a special one-hour show during Bike Week, which is the 11th of June to the 19th of June. Not quite sure which day of the week it will be, but the details will be on the website. And until then, chapeau. Thanks for listening.
Chilometro e mezzo al traguardo, si sposta Sacchi.
E adesso c'è Ongarato.
Alberto Ongarato con Marco Velo. Gli ultimi uomini per Alessandro Petacchi, c'è anche Tosatto. Siamo ormai sotto lo striscione dell'ultimo chilometro.
Tra un po' dovrebbe spostarsi Ongarato e dovrebbe partire Matteo Tosatto.
Clerc avanza a ruota di Bettini, c'è Pari De Grillo, 800 metri ancora.
È il campione sloveno Murna che sta cercando di portare avanti Aurélien Clerc.
È messo molto bene Paolo Bettini.
Ed è lui.
Pericolosissimo Stuart O'Grady.
È Murna in prima posizione, campione sloveno della Fonac.
Mezzo chilometro, siamo alla virata conclusiva, gentili telespettatori. Petacchi è in terza posizione, davanti a lui due gregari. Si sposta Forster a centro strada. C'è Pari De Grillo. Pari De Grillo sembra in grado di resistere. A ruota di Grillo c'è Alessandro Petacchi. Esce Alessandro Petacchi, passa Pari De Grillo. È una lotta tra Petacchi e Grillo, ma Petacchi vince, vince, vince Petacchi. Su Grillo, terzo arriva Galvez, non ha trovato il varco oggi Robbie McEwen, anticipato tutti Pari De Grillo, ma Petacchi è di un altro pianeta, l'ha passato nettamente.